True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service. We've been in business for 20-plus years, and we are Christian-owned and operated. Honesty, integrity, and professionalism has always been our motto. That is sincerely our desire. My goal is constantly to treat people in an absolutely positive way. Money's not an issue. Over the years, I've been in various business environments where people, you know, I call it, you know, like selective ethics or whatever you want to call it, situational ethics, where they'll treat people different based on what they think they can get out of them, which is sort of the epitome of, you know, human greed, I suppose. But no, my goal is to live my life and operate, you know, by the highest standards I can. I'm definitely not perfect at all, but I've been blessed by God, and he's given me a lot of love for people. And I used to really get frustrated and impatient, but now I get even more frustrated. No, I'm kidding. God's given me some grace in that area. We'll just say that. But we really do appreciate all of your business and your loyalty. And I know I have like a lot of people. I have like a dozen people I'm supposed to call back. It's been insane. I've mentioned it. God's doing some good things. I'm praying, and I hope you'll pray too. We've got some different options on people and some people coming back. But God's just, you know, he's opening doors. I just don't want to make bad decisions. So pray for our decision-making. Pray that God gives us, you know, keeps our staff healthy and well. There's a certain personality for this business, and that personality is relatively detail-oriented. I mean, it's a difficult business. A lot of people think we just stand there and buy gold and silver. Not at all. I mean, we buy everything from, you know, you're dealing with coins right now. We're dealing with, you know, when I was coming up, gold nuggets, which are basically, you know, they come out of the ground in all different purities. It's always kind of funny. I always say nuggets and diamonds. Everybody who has nuggets and diamonds think they always think it's worth way more than it is, which is interesting because every gold coin, I mean, if you had any clue how many gold coins have been made over the years, every gold coin technically starts out as a nugget. Yes, there's placer gold, which is kind of the powdery fine stuff. But even the larger nuggets were, you know, 10% of that or more technically when they were a lot of it comes from long ago when, you know, big nuggets didn't matter. Now there's people that like them. I just bought one the other day that's like 8.5 ounces of, 8.4 ounces. It's pure, absolutely amazing. It's Australian gold, I think. At least that's what I was told. It looks a little more ore rich. It's really nice. It's like a high grade, but it's an 8.5 ounce nugget. Beautiful thing. That kind of stuff's hard for me to part with. It's actually interesting. But like I said, it's pure gold. Let me see something here. If somebody's interested in that, since I brought it up, you can come and get it, but it's not cheap. It's like, you're looking at like almost $14,000, but it's cool. It may end up in my office at my house. But so we were just buying some little nuggets from a guy that are, you know, from different areas. And, you know, the way gold comes out of the earth is interesting. The way it's formed is interesting. And it has this weird tendency to surface, which I'm yet to understand. I remember growing up in Montana, and you could have jobs as long as you wanted, picking rock on farms, because the earth continues to push the rock up. You tell me. You go to Ireland, Scotland, Israel. These farms are basically surrounded by rock walls that they've built from rock that just continuously gets pushed up out of the earth. You know, and then so the earth does some odd things. Not sure about that. Wouldn't you think heavy stuff would fall and light stuff would rise, you know, kind of like the air? So anyway, we, you know, like I said, the purity levels can range from anywhere from 50-60% all the way to 100% when it comes out of the earth. And a lot of people like their nuggets. I have my share of, I like quartz. You'll get these nice big pieces of quartz with this beautiful crystalline gold growth on it, which is, they're super rare. That kind of stuff I keep. There's just a lot of interesting stuff. I mean, we're looking at watches today, a Rolex and a Omega, and then we're buying all kinds of jewelry and diamonds and coin collections. And I mean, so there's just a lot of knowledge, and you got to have your numbers really right. Different personalities perceive things differently. Rule followers, personalities, they get it the first time, hopefully, and then they stick with it. The problem is sometimes they'll try to apply a rule to a broader spectrum of things that we tell them that doesn't apply, or they'll misunderstand what percentage of the spectrum that rule covers or whatever. And it's very detail-oriented. It's very thought-oriented. It's very communication-oriented. We're continuously, iron sharpens iron, as the Bible says. And it's really important because we're moving so many millions and millions of dollars all the time, and our margins are thin to win. And, you know, like I said, I recently had an employee make a substantial error with a substantial amount of money by throwing a bunch of gold in a priority mailbox and shipping it across the country, which got, you know, of course, ripped open and torn out and stolen, and it was substantial. In order to replace that amount, I mean, because our margins are so thin, I mean, it's basically the profit of a couple million dollars in volume. That's the thing with what we do, is you have to watch so closely. You don't have room for error. And, of course, gold is God's money. It's absolutely liquid asset anywhere, anytime. There's no serial numbers. There's no nothing. I mean, there's no title, you know. If people don't understand, I was kind of laughing yesterday with a guy who was buying some gold, and he asked for a certificate, or maybe it was today. And I'm like, the gold speaks for itself. Yeah, but don't you have a certificate? I'm like, it's a piece of cardboard. I'm like, no, you buy a gold coin, and you got a gold coin. And, it's interesting that people, and of course he was very young. So good for him for buying gold, right? But you also, it's just the concept of people have such a hard time now appreciating true tangible assets that have innate value or intrinsic value. And because they have this thing, well, I can sell my old Xbox games on eBay for $5. They don't see them. They don't look at those and say they have value. They're like, there's some other fool out there that'll pay me $5. You have to find that guy. When you have precious metals, as long as man has walked this earth, and like I said, Genesis chapter 2 is where gold is introduced in the land of Havilah. I find that profound that God went straight to that so fast. Second chapter, Genesis. I told them where to find it. In other words, I mean, by the time the word, was out, obviously the gold's probably gone, but the fact is, maybe it wasn't, who knows, but it had to be, whatever. But, he's telling you where the gold is or the gold was, and, it's the low sandy land, which is interesting because that's where some of the best gold comes from, is sandy land, because at least now, post-flood, we have what are called sulfur vents, which are like, some kind of volcanic activity that push gold nuggets up. I have a customer years back that went on a tour in the outback in Australia where they would go out and drive around in these Land Rover Defenders, the big beefcake safari rigs. And they'd actually look at, they'd wait. He was out there for 3 weeks and they'd wait for these crazy windstorms. And what happens is, it's kind of ironic. Again, it's kind of contrary to what you think. The earth pushes up gold nuggets, and apparently they're still coming up in the outback of Australia. And when the wind blows, the weight of the nugget holds the sand underneath from blowing away in a storm. And they drive around, and they literally find these little cones sticking up in certain areas, and they run around, and they pick this stuff up. Gold. And this friend of mine, it's been years. I'm going to say maybe 8 or 10 years. He was there 3 weeks. He actually found, and he really did well. He knew his stuff, and he was determined. They'd camp at night, and everybody'd be at the bonfire, and he said he'd be running around at night with the, he brought his high-power military, you know, 1,200 lumen flashlights, plural, him and his buddy, and they'd be running around all night. He said they hardly slept because they'd be running around finding stuff at night, you know, and while everybody else was sleeping. He's like, why am I, what, you know, why sleep when I can have free gold? And he got a little over 38 ounces, which you can do the math. It worked out. He said not every tour ends up that way, et cetera, but it's really interesting. So that's kind of how gold seems to, that's one of the main ways gold seems to originate on Earth. Then from that point, you can get into all kinds of theories. A lot of the gold we find now is found in the mountaintops, which is, again, contrary to common sense. And then you get into some interesting theories. There used to be a website called saint.com, S8S8INT.com, like saint, like Christian saint, like Saint Paul. And they used to do a lot. Well, they'd show a lot of these. They called ooparts, out-of-place artifacts. And they would find in the craziest places, like in gold mines or coal mines, they would find, like, gold bells. I mean, obviously man-made. Gold boots. You know, things like this that just didn't make sense. And so one of the theories is, this is going to sound kind of ironic, but before the flood, we had, you know, well, I'll back up. J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote Lord of the Rings, was one of the main translators on the Dead Sea Scrolls. And when I was really, when that series was running hard back in the early 2000s, and I was watching it one time, and when we went over to Israel and went down to Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls had been found, I just gobbled up every single thing I could find. And there's a lot of texts that are highly fragmented, so they really don't get published. But that's where the cool stuff is. There's like one called the Book of the Giants, and it's very fragmented, but it talks about what we're familiar with, where it tells us in the Bible the angels were bound, you know, with everlasting chains or whatever, until, you know, till their day comes, and you know, et cetera. How's that for a really nice scripture quoting? Anyway, so that's in the Book of Giants, and so basically the point, the whole story there in the Book of Giants is that prior to the flood, God basically said, "I can't." Contend, my soul or my spirit or whatever God said cannot contend with man forever or immortally. Okay, and the Bible before that tells us that the sons of God married any of the daughters of men they chose. So I've discussed these guys had to be the big strapping, good looking hunks that all of our wives wish they married. But apparently not all of them are so lucky. And but these guys were huge. They were amazing. They were phenomenal. So we have, you know, evidence of this. And then when you of that, and so Noah and Enoch in the Book of Giants, which, by the way, these are books preserved by the Essene sect of the Levites, E-S-S-E-N-E, I believe, or maybe two N's. I think it's one. It's the sect that Jesus and John the Baptist came from. Very strict. Very orthodox, and they were responsible. The Levites are responsible for the preservation of Scripture. You know, there's been tons of evidence that, you know, they find the Dead Sea Scrolls. Before that, the oldest translation, a manuscript of the Book of Isaiah example, very, very in-depth, extensive book, right? Before that, the newest translation, oldest, was 1500 A.D., and then they find stuff from, you know, 500 BC, and so all of a sudden it's 10,000 or 2,000 years, and they find there's only 6 errors, and it's in punctuation. So they were able to repeat. The scribes were so strict And they'd have to do everything by hand. And that is the whole point of the Jewish Mishnah, the oral tradition. You know, Jews in general have the highest IQ by nationality on earth. Between the book of Hebrew, all the memorizing they do, and the fact that when, or the book of Hebrew, the Hebrew language, I'm sorry, and then when you study Hebrew, there's a lot of mathematical connotations and even the concepts of numbers in Hebrew, as you're aware, you know, the 12 apostles and, you know, 7 days, the number of completion and, you know, the 40 days, the number of testing and, you know, these things come up. So they learn all this numerical stuff and it seems to pique the human mind. Imagine that God would give us, that his instruction booklet would actually be food for our soul and our body and our spirit, right? And so these, you know, they have a really strong understanding and comprehension of this stuff. And so when you go back, you've got, they've just got a whole bunch of other stuff. But so you got in the Book of Giants, Noah and Enoch confront or discuss with some giants that the fact that God's going to destroy the earth, that they're going to have to be bound. And that literally they express human emotions and all this stuff. Then it says they went to the deepest valley on earth, wherever that was. It hadn't ever rained. We know that there was probably oceans because I discussed creation recently and he says there were seas and oceans. But we don't know where this valley is. Right now, the deepest valley on earth is the Marianas Trench, what's 35,000 feet deep. There's been stuff back years back, decades back, even back to the 60s, where submarines were looking for transcontinental passageways underneath the United States. One had entered in a deep point in the Pacific and had been communicated with all the way under Kansas City. So there's definitely some massive tunnels under there. And there's other evidence for that. I know an Exxon guy who was the head of oil exploration for Exxon North America, who had all kinds of crazy stories. 4 miles under the Gulf, they break into these caverns that are 1,250 feet, he said, and then like 250 feet of fresh water. And so they have to change their drill bits. But, I mean, it's just, you know, and it's fresh water down there. So what's down there? I mean, who knows? You know, there's all kinds of weird theories. But so what I was getting at is J.R.R. Tolkien was one of the translators. And when you go through a lot of these old books, the Dead Sea Scrolls, the stuff that was preserved, again, remember, as scripture, respected as scripture and respected as so important, they stored these things all over the mountains of Qumran, near the Dead Sea. And, you know, lo and behold, they were all preserved until Israel regathered in 1948. A rabbi, I believe, was in maybe Jordan or something, I think, and he went into a shoe store and he saw that a kid was cutting out these old parchment manuscripts in ancient Hebrew, and apparently in Jordan, it might be primarily Palestinian or whatever it is. And he said, "What is that you got?" You know, and the kid showed him some, and he had a bunch more. And the guy was like, "This rabbi was like, what in the world? Where'd you get these?" And then they began to find out, you know, and then they dug out a lot of these Dead Sea Scrolls. Well, in these scrolls, in these stories that were preserved by the Levites, the Essenes, there's many crazy things. There's stuff about Middle Earth. There's a lot of different creatures that apparently had made their way to Earth. I mean, we've got, like I've said, we know of all kinds of spiritual beings in the Bible. But we're like, hey, if it's not right there in front of me now, I can't believe it. Well, there's a reason God destroyed the earth. And he does tell us of one of the main issues was these fallen angels having children with women that would create these giants. And then people say, oh, giants, you know, 11 feet tall. That's not how the story goes in the Book of Enoch. They were so massive, it says they would fight and crush mountains. Noah says specifically about the Nephilim, he said, this is where the stories of the Greek gods come from, okay? He tells us that. The Greek gods weren't 11 feet tall. According to Enoch, these things were like 3,000 ells tall, which is a lot. I mean, it's a lot. It's thousands of feet tall. It's ridiculous, okay? That's what the Book of Enoch says. Now, it's not a canonized scripture to us today, according to, you know, the Council of Laodicea and Nicaea, the last two. But it was the number one handled, carried, respected, and adored book to the Jews at the time of Christ and Christians. And then it became later punishable by death. There's all kinds of mind-freeing things. And it kind of condemned the Catholic Church kind of behavior. It's got a lot of great, fantastic stories, but it's awesome. And then in the book of Jude, if the book of Enoch's not good, why do they quote it directly in the book of Jude and tell us that Enoch was the great prophet? Okay? So all these stories culminate. They're amazing. They're fantastical. So I was watching Lord of the Rings, and I was like, this is crazy. This is really similar to the Dead Sea Scrolls. Went online, did the research, and guess what? He was involved with the translation. And this is where he got inspired for those books. So the times before the flood were quite interesting. So the point was, with the gold, there are stories that these great kingdoms had formed on highest, you know, points on earth, just like we see in Lord of the Rings or whatever, made out of solid gold, or so much gold it was, you know, it was uncountable. Well, then you get the great flood, you get incredible meteorites and whatever smashing the earth, the outer shell coming down, water pouring down beyond, I mean, you know, literally high enough to cover all the mountains. I do believe that after the flood, the tectonic plates shifted and pushed a lot of mountains a lot higher. But whatever it was high. And that amount of water moving at a rapid pace could cut out all kinds of things. A lot of the sedimentary rock and a lot of the incredible formations we see, like the Grand Canyon, things like that, could be formed in a very short period of time if the dirt was being settled. And if the water hit the earth so fast, so hard, it would be literally just absolute complete mud, which basically carries very frictional properties with it. I don't know if you know much about water, but you know, the thing is with even copper pipes, the friction of water will wear holes in pipes, just water. It's a bizarre fact. And so once you fill it with all these sediments, not only are they going to be deposited, but along the way, it's like a plasma sandblaster. It's more powerful than a sandblaster because it's got the weight, force, and mass of the water behind it while it's fully contained in the water, probably at maximum solution. And that would explain a lot of what we've seen. It becomes like a diamond saw blade. When that water's rushing around the earth, they have records of what they say is a 600-foot deep landslide from like northeast U.S. down to the Grand Canyon. Well, that would explain things. You know, I mean, who knows the tilt angle of the earth at the time. So essentially where I was going with that is you'd have these great kingdoms on hilltops, this one theory, and that through all this beating of the flood and the movement of the earth, a lot of this gold was destroyed or pressed down, and that's why we find it in some of the most obscure regions on earth. And of course the big stuff's been picked over a lot, but you know, they dig up more and more all the time. That's just one interesting theory. It definitely wouldn't account for everything out there, but it'd account for some of the crazy ore deposits they find, or the fact that they run in great big lines, you know, for a long period of time. There's actually even wire gold. Liberty, Washington was one of the classic mines. It's literally wire. I mean, it's a wire, absolute perfect wire, and it runs through the earth for very long periods of, you know, very long distances. Well, gold is the ultimate conductor. Very likely it was used somewhere, you know, a lot of it's up by Wenatchee and, or south of the Wenatchee Forest. And it's throughout those mountains. It follows the striations, but it is literally wire, folks. When they mine all that or people go get it out, they bring me jars of wire. Now that stuff's about gone now. I haven't seen it for a long time, but how'd that get there? How does gold get spread into wire after wire after wire? And I'm talking there's very little variation in the width of it. So was there electronics at the time? Did they have gold they used to conduct things? I mean, who knows? I'm not sure. But it's just an interesting side note that I thought I'd ramble on about there for a minute. I'm sure you appreciated that. So what do we got going on out there in the world? We got Bernie Sanders has got beat by Biden, which is interesting because a friend of mine who's pretty connected back in D.C. was kind of mocking me when I was telling him Trump will win by a landslide. He said, you know, basically saying, well, I obviously have more faith in the system than he does, and he's well into the system. And then when I see this shift for Biden, I mean, these poor people have no choice on who to vote for. We had, my understanding is that we had Mike Bloomberg drop out today. Trump was calling him Mini Mike. He spent $1 billion of his own money to drop out. He's worth $64 billion. He's got nothing but money. I mean, it's actually pretty pathetic. I think you'd probably agree that someone could waste such an amount of money. And literally, he was so arrogant. I mean, he thought he could buy the office. He'd be a terrible leader. He's the mayor of New York. You know, he did not come out well. He's got that billionaire arrogance that essentially believes that he's superior to others. At least that's the impression that I got. And I mean, he was just rude. He didn't even know how to conduct himself, frankly, which is kind of sad. But it does say there's a lot of things about a rich man in the Bible that, you know, is true. I think almost as if the Bible is right, you know. But there's, let's see here, I think there's, deceived, okay, we got God's not mocked. Okay, let's see here. I was trying to think, I know where there's a scripture I wanted to look up. But anyway, I guess I don't have it in front of me. So, I mean, he essentially tells us that those who, you know, fall for riches or wealth, they, you know, it creates a great snare. It grabs them, it consumes them, and it ruins them. And so it's the spirit of the rich, spirit of riches, Jesus said, is essentially, you know, the love of money, right, is the root of all evil. And we've got, I think it's 1 Timothy 6 is where those, it says, and this is important to think about with money, because first of all, we've got the Bible, you know, talks about money throughout. It's relevant. There's things like no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Newer versions are saying God and money, which is true and false. Mammon in Greek means man-made money, the spirit of man-made or self-made money. It's the I'm a self-made man, I'm all about it. It's a deeper, more arrogant form of, you know, self-pride, I guess. It's more than just money. It's the love of your ability to consume it. And you think about what it says in 1 Timothy 6:9. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money, 1 Timothy 6:10, is the root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it, again, keyword longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. He tells you to flee from these things, you man of God, pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance and gentleness, fight the good fight of faith. And he goes on. It's super critical here that you understand it's the Spirit. Timothy knew Paul very well, and he writes about those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. So you think, oh, that's those guys. Well, is it? I see people make the stupidest financial decisions always based on greed. Sounds too good to be true. I better sign right up. Well, I trusted the man. You're accountable for your money. I mean, you are flat accountable for every, you're a steward for what God gives you. You know, I talk to people all the time and I'm like, just, you know, if someone's in a 401k or an IRA and they're not ready to move or they have a relative, stay super conservative. Don't push your luck. Don't chase money. I've made a few mistakes myself over the years, trust me. Buying things, why? Thought there'd be a big return. Well, guess what? Great big loss, you know. Solid, steady, consistent gains. Holding your wealth in your hand is a good thing, obviously. Precious metals-based assets are great. I mean, they're God's ordained and authorized form of wealth and currency. And we've, you know, obviously that's what we do for a living. There's a number of people out there I need to get back with if you're interested. After the show tonight, maybe after 6 call, we've got some, I've got a, you know, some quantities of metals that we're, you know, we're basically going to be selling off at a pretty, very, very reasonable low levels. And some of the old coinage and stuff, US 90% silver and things like that. If you're ready to get in, we've got some good values right now. I'll just leave it at that. It's definitely a time for you to take advantage of it. And if you want, you can just hop on the bus now. Like I said, I got people to call back all day long. We're a little short-staffed, and I'm just bouncing. And it's one thing after the next. And it's hard. I don't mean to whine and make excuses, but it's that bad. And I'd love to get back to everybody, but I tend to talk to people a little bit too much. So if you want to preserve your wealth in a godly, biblical, conservative way, give us a call right now. We'll take care of you. Build you a portfolio. So essentially what I'm saying doesn't contradict. You want to be a wise steward. God says it's very important that you're a wise steward. He makes it crystal clear that you're responsible. Money tells God and us our heart condition. It's a tangible track record of our heart condition. And you have to realize that, because we can't see the inside. We can only see the outside. And so it does show God everything. Now, the love of money, I cannot tell you. It's interesting, the desire to get rich. And it says, for the love of money is the root of all evil, right? And we all is the root of all sorts of evil. So all kinds of evil. It's not the root of all evil. It's the root of all sorts of evil, which in the Greek is pas, which means, well, it means all things, every, what, whosoever, everyone. So basically it does mean each, every, any, all, the whole. So it is. The love of money is the root of all evil. That's crazy. They always say follow the money. You want to know on politics or anything why people are doing what they do? Follow the money. Can you find men that have a purpose without the love of money? Of course, it's just not an evil purpose. But when you have people like Bernie Sanders and these guys standing up there just spewing, they might as well just stand there and spit, or worse, on the graves of all of our founders, curse the Constitution. These people are of no good use in the United States, honestly. I mean, they're tearing things down. You know, it's interesting. I always say it's kind of the godless versus the God-loving in general. Not all conservatives are Christians, and not all liberals are atheists, but the proportion of Bible-believing Christians is a lot higher, much higher in the conservative parties than it is in the liberal. And they, you know, they see things completely differently. You get these things where they're completely dishonest and they're, you know, they're just deceiving everybody. And they're, you know, the Bible says, let no unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only such as edifying for those who listen. Politics has become so vile that they have to trash their enemies so bad they can't ever stop. They can never give Trump a break. I hope people are smart enough to understand that. I hope our morality hasn't gone the wayside so bad. But when you get these guys like Hillary Clinton, who's livid she lost, she's spoiled. I mean, what, she's worth $320 million after going into the White House worth, you know, according to them, $800,000. Same with Obama. Just loaded. Bernie Sanders, millions and millions of dollars. Flies around in a Gulfstream 6. I mean, it's like a $60 million plane. Gulfstream 5, $50 million. And curses everybody who has money. I mean, it's just absolute hypocrite. I'm sorry, but it's just a fact. And they're just, they have the desire to make money. They want to use their position of power to gain money. Look at Biden. Look at his son. You know, his son was involved with that, I can't remember right now, Burisma or whatever, in Ukraine, you know, and he's got deals with China where he got billions of dollars invested into various funds and, you know, and Joe's behind him. I mean, Joe's as crooked as they come, folks. He's as crooked as they come. And people, why anybody would ever think a guy like that would make a good president is crazy. I mean, he's loopy. He can't even say people's names right. He doesn't even know where he's at half the time. He literally has said that he's running for the U.S. Senate. He's, you know, it just goes on and on. The guy is really not fit. But I think the Democratic Party is trying to swing things to get an avowed Marxist and atheist out of the race. Now, I remember when the Socialist Party was a laughingstock. You know, it's greed. The love of money is how he's appealing to people. Why? Because people suffer various infirmities. Most are man-caused, like student loan debt, that they all want paid for free and clear. Guaranteed that ain't ever going to happen. $1.8 trillion, not going to happen. You know, and all this other garbage things that he promises, I could go down the list. It's insane. It's beyond, I don't even know. I went through it one night and I was trying to like, how much would this cost? And I figured, you know, who knows, $300 trillion. Our deficit's currently $25 trillion. He would destroy the country. On the other hand, if he ever got elected, we'd have an awful uprising in this country. America would be doomed to get a guy like that in office. I mean, it'd be terrifying to have an avowed Marxist, absolutely outspoken about it. I mean, these times are crazy times. So just, if you keep in mind that anytime things are going on, people have something to gain. Timothy says the love of money is the root of all evil. I can't debate with the Bible, but maybe not all. I don't know. Maybe, you know, there's people that have other motivations, I suppose. But who am I to correct the Bible? So the love of it. So where I was going with that is it's the spirit of it. Those who want to get rich and the love of money, you know, and then it says is the root of all sorts of evil, and some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. There's different, like, multi-level marketing things out there and all kinds of things where people will chase money. They'll spend their whole life chasing the fantasy of big bucks, and they'll just live in the dream world, and they just think about when they get it and how great it's going to be and what they're going to do with it. And, you know, and it's destructive. It destroys the man from within. And again, we got to be good stewards with what God gives us. If you're faithful with little, he will give you much. I've seen it time and again. I've seen a lot of people that can't get off the ground financially because every time God gives them a break, they do something foolish with their money. They don't invest it wisely. They're not out doing, the parable of talents where they're turning it over and increasing it. And, you know, again, you just use nice, solid, common sense things. Elbow grease, you know, there's people that are flipping houses or buying things and selling them, whatever it may be. But don't, you know, fall into the temptation of, if something sounds like it's just going to pay off crazy, you can imagine over all my years and money, the phone calls I've gotten and, you know, the people are going to get this big inheritance and they're going to get, and they'll, you know, spend their lives with people or the last years with people and, you know, just for the money. It's sad. Families tear up over it. They get separated by it. It just goes on and on like this. I mean, families literally, I've seen so many estates, I couldn't count them. I get in the middle of them with all kinds of stuff, with jewelry, diamonds, coins, all sorts of things. You know, and I'm what the way they treat each other and behave blows my mind. And I think it's important that we understand that we want to be respectful with money. We think of money as not ours and but belongs to God or whoever we're working for or whatever. And we honor and respect it because we understand that the way we handle money says everything about us and our character and our integrity. It really does. The way we handle other people's money, if we work for a business, if we're wasteful, if we're foolish, if we're, you know, handing people free stuff when the boss isn't looking or we're getting kickbacks or I've seen it all. No, you know, that's the wrong spirit about stewardship. God is very clear about money being an absolute stamp of our character and integrity, and so you can track it and see it. Just remember that. If you're super wasteful with money, if you can't control it, and I don't care what you got. I don't care if you're on Social Security. Save 10 bucks a month. Save 20 bucks a month. Whatever you can do. Just start saving it, build it up, maybe get some gold and silver, whatever, or, you know, whatever. There's a ton of neat things you can put your money in that are hard assets that last forever. I love hard assets. I've got, obviously, lots of metal, tons of rare coins, incredible, my own. I'm not talking as a business, but I like guns and cars and real estate and things like that. But I love gold the most and silver. I love precious metal and rare coins because they're just liquid and they can go up so much when you have the right stuff. And when we do portfolios, we hand select all that stuff for you. So the Bible was saying you can't serve two masters, God and money. And I mentioned that it's basically, or mammon is the old term that we're familiar with. And let's see here. We'll get into that. The word itself is, can't serve two masters, for either he'll hate the one and love the other. With the same reason you can't have two spouses, and anyone who wants that is nuts anyway, but one's enough, right? But it says you'll hate the one, or you'll be devoted to the one and love the other. That's the way God made us, a singular love, apparently. The certain kinds of love. And it says, you cannot serve God and mammonos, wealth, money, whatever. And what's interesting about the word mammonos is it says, for the definition in Greek, riches which are personified and opposed to God. Think about that. And then below it says, overconfidence in one's wealth, personified again. And then down here it says, one's wealth deified. Okay, so I've heard men say, I'm a self-made man. There used to be this guy that'd come in here just real loud, Kevin, I'm a self-made man. And he'd go on and on and on, and it was just such piety. It's like, you're a self-made man. Last I checked, you're a man made by God with the ability to function. If you've got some skills and abilities, then praise and glory be to God. If you happen to benefit financially, then praise God and give him his due. And the bottom line is when you serve God, he will bless you. But it's not to take the glory. I mean, we are God's creation. Nothing we do could we do without him. We wouldn't even exist without him. And so the love of money is the root of all evil, the desire for it. And then it tells us you can't serve two masters. The love, you can't be the self-made man mentality and serve God. You can be richer than rich, and the Bible tells us being rich can make you fall into many temptations and snares and snags and financial problems. So you have to maintain, you know, responsible behavior that way and maintain good control of it. And I think that's really critical in that, you know, you can't serve two masters. I think that's super critical. And I think people take a lot of these things out of context, or they misunderstand what the Bible's saying. Money's not bad. God created it. Money in and of itself is inert. It's what you do with it that dictates whether it's good or bad. And it's also a heart condition. It reflects it, you know. So, I mean, I don't know how else to clarify it. I just see where God's given us that. It's the entire system. It's the fuel that feeds the world. You know, money makes the world go round. Doesn't mean it's bad. It's just a system. It's a system of checks and balances and accountability. It's a way God can raise one man up and bring another man down. It's a way God can bless people. It's a way that he can show you. We learn a lot when we make financial mistakes. I know plenty of you who've, you know, had some tough financial returns on things. You know how it feels. Man, there's nothing like that, you know, and hopefully it's not as big as some of the mistakes I made back in the day, but eventually you quit. You quit trying to chase the money, you quit trying to be greedy, you know, and you just try to be a good steward, as in the parable of talents. Timothy again tells us we brought nothing into the world, and we will not take anything out of the world. Remember that. And so he says, if we had food and clothing, with these we shall be content. Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, many senseless and hurtful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Desire for money. When you save your money, do not chase greed. Do not say, oh, my investments are, you know, they're kicking tail. I'm going to hang in there a little longer. I'm going to wait a while. You're not the person that's going to be able to time the market. If you have a nice profit made on stuff, secure it. There's a good rollout opportunity. Donald Trump has spread out the tax brackets so you can absorb substantial amounts of, IRA rollovers if you're over 59 and a half, or rollouts. People don't realize that they're essentially, you're going to pay the tax anyway. It's always a good idea to cash out and get something solid. Get, you know what, we can do precious metals and 401ks, but you do lose the immediate access, I guess, when you have paper stocks or whatever. It's not much different, but a lot of people want to hold it. You got to remember with a 401k, the taxes will be paid, period. They may be paid by you, they may be paid by your decedents after you die, your descendants, and, you know, but it's ultimately going to be paid. There is no question about that. So a lot of people get hung up on this tax deferral. It's like, look, pay me now or pay me later. So I suggest in a lot of cases, take what you got, get yourself secured in hard assets. Do I believe that there's a big future in the metals? Absolutely. I don't think there is. There is no hope otherwise. We have ran our deficit through the mountaintop. It is absolutely at a level that you could not even fathom. I can't, it makes no sense to me whatsoever, you know, the way we've racked this thing up. And, you know, the Dow is running like crazy, and, you know, it's just this pumping out of currency. I'm on usdebtclock.org, and so they're creating $1 million, I think, every, I don't even know how long I'm watching this thing. There's, you know, it's $100,000 is created probably about almost every second. So $1 million every 10 seconds. So $6 million a minute. You know, when you take that, you know, 60 minutes in an hour, you know, so $360 million an hour, you take that times a day, it's $8.6 billion a day. $8.6 billion a day is being created right now into our debt. $8.6 billion a day. Billion. Absolutely unheard of, our deficits racking up. And that's counterbalanced with tax credits. So the tax credits go against it. So when we're seeing that increase, it's only about 25%, because 75% of our debt increase is paid by taxation. So rather than $8.6 billion an hour, we're technically probably more like $35 billion an hour. So I don't know if that means anything to you, but I can tell you one thing. Our population's not growing that fast, even on Earth. And so ultimately what's happening is the spending power of your dollar is just dropping and dropping and dropping without you knowing it. And I mentioned they give us the Consumer Price Index, which is an artificial index. It's supposed to tell us what inflation is, but the Consumer Price Index became an exclusionary index primarily under Clinton. He really took a couple rips at it, a big one. Reagan played with it a little before, to my, you know, chagrin a little bit. But, you know, they removed the major categories in general. There's parts and parcels of it left because they have to say it's there. Food, real estate, transportation, and energy costs, which is what you spend, the average American, 85% of your disposable income on. That's not calculated in there. Those are the things that keep going up and won't stop. Think about it. Food, transportation, real estate, and energy costs. These are the things you cannot help to pay, and they go up and up and up. And if you look at their inflation rate, it's way more than the 1.3% they're reporting, you know? I mean, you got the Fed dropping rates. If our inflation's so low, I mean, it just doesn't, it's all based on a fallacy. They drop the rates, they get things fired up again, they're pumping up that stock market. Be prepared, come the next election, they may be building this baby up to pull it back tight before the election and really take a slam on our economy. There's got to be something up their sleeve. I've never seen anything like this in my life. Obviously, I'm not that old. I haven't seen everything, but it's an interesting time, to say the least. And so we've got, you know, gold and silver are mentioned all throughout the Bible as money. We've created this man-made paper currency, which now isn't even paper. You carry around a piece of plastic. People want to buy precious metals on their credit cards. Folks, they charge 3% or 4% for American Express, or even more for certain American Express. Can't do it. The fees, that's our entire margin. And also, they're retractable. It's not a finalized form of payment. But you know how much money goes through the company Visa a year? No one does. It's privately owned. But I'll tell you what, it is absolutely unfathomable. That's a patent that paid off for somebody. I guarantee you that. And, you know, the amount of money that's going through our cashless system, the amount of control they have. And along that line, as far as the Big Brother thing goes, I got a quick note here from a friend of mine who's on the Connect. He says, Apple admits to scanning user photos, presumably only to hunt child abuse. Apple has confirmed that it scans user images in an effort to detect. Now, think about this. You got an Apple phone, they're scanning your images. In an effort to detect evidence of child abuse. But the company has revealed little about how the scans work, piquing concerns about data privacy and the reach of intrusive tech firms. While it's unclear when the image scans started, Apple's chief privacy officer, Jane Honeth, confirmed at an event in Vegas this week that the company is now, quote, utilizing some technologies to help screen for child sexual abuse material, unquote. Apple initially suggested it might inspect images for abuse material last year, and only this week added a disclaimer to its website acknowledging the practice. But Honeth's remarks come as the first confirmation the company has gone ahead with the scans. Then it goes on, a number of tech giants, including Facebook, Twitter, Google, already employ an image scanning tool known as PhotoDNA, which cross-checks photos with a database of known abuse images. It's unknown whether Apple's scanning tool also uses similar technology. And then it goes on, you know, Apple, Tesla, and others, U.S. tech giants sued, it says, over child labor deaths at cobalt mines in the Congo, and the move sent off alarms for critics, and it goes on and on. So here's their reasoning, you know. And the bottom line is, what does that mean? I mean, it's terrifying language. And this, you know, the guy who wrote this said the company has been excessively vague about the scans, noting, quote, all it says is that they can scan all your images, flip through all your data, contacts, notes, web history, everything, looking for potentially illegal activity, including child pornography. That's what their disclaimer says. They can go through whatever they want looking for potentially illegal activity, folks. Big brother. So what do you do with your phone to block that? You got me, but you might want to look into that. If you figure it out, let me know. Well, you can still get updates and everything at the same time. That is not a good thing. They always use some big mask, okay? Sure, they're using, I mean, everyone hates child pornography and everyone hates pedophilia, and it's terrible and it's evil and it's rotten, just like we hate terrorists bombing planes, so we give up all of our rights. This is a massive, major violation. This is brand new information that just came out on Valentine's Day. So keep that in mind. Be aware. Give us a call. Let us take care of you. If we haven't gotten back to you, feel free to call again. Thanks for tuning in. We very much appreciate it. And I'd like to wish my daughter a wonderful 30th birthday today. You can do a 3 Google ratings or 3 ratings online and get a free $2 silver. Take care. God bless. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.